Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Research at the National Archives and Beyond, Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett, and I want to welcome our callers and chatters to Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This show will provide individuals interested in genealogy an opportunity to listen, learn, and take action. Now, you can join me every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, where I will have a wonderful lineup of experts who will share resources, stories, and answer your burning genealogy questions. All of my guests share a deep passion and knowledge of genealogy and history. Now, what I plan to offer to my listeners, I want to try to do it, let's say, maybe once a month, is an opportunity to hear about resources available throughout the country. And you can, you know, find that generally the library is a very, very valuable resource for anyone who's doing history. And I try to make it a point to visit a library whenever I go to various cities just to see what they have in their genealogy collection. Well, tonight's discussion is going to focus on Edgefield, South Carolina genealogy resources. And I am so happy to have Tanya Broder as a guest on this show tonight. I met Tanya, I guess, about 7 years ago, and I found Tanya Broder, Dr. Constant McNeil, and Carol Hardy Bryan to be excellent resources for me when I was trying to do some research in Edgefield, South Carolina. Tanya is the director of the Tompkins Memorial Library in Edgefield. And since becoming the director, she has played an important role in the organization of the library's material and has published a number of resource books on Edgefield County genealogy. She also played a role in researching information on the Reverend L. Sharpton, 50 Cents, as well as others. Tanya worked for 7 years as a community historian for the Savannah River Archaeological Research Program, and this is a division of the South Carolina Institute of Archaeology and Anthropology. And her work involved conducting an oral history of a history project on former towns and hamlets of the Savannah River site. And so she comes with us, she brings actually to this show a great deal of expertise. So let me give a warm welcome to Tanya. Welcome, Tanya. Are you online?
I am, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Well, Tanya, you know, why don't we just tell people just where is Edgefield, South Carolina?
Well, Edgefield, South Carolina is about 25 miles from Augusta, Georgia. We're right near the Savannah River, if anybody is familiar with that. We were quite a large district at one time. We encompassed what is now part of Aiken, McCormick, Greenwood, and most of Saluda County, so we were quite a large district.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now tell us about the Tompkins Library and the various organizations that are housed there.
All right, well, the Tompkins Memorial Library is a genealogical library where we're dedicated to genealogical research. We became a genealogy library in 1985 when we became the Old Edgefield District Genealogical Society, mm-hmm. which is a part of the South Carolina Genealogical Society.
Okay.
And then in 2005, we formed our Old Edgefield District African American Genealogical Society. And then in 2008, we became the headquarters for the South Carolina Genealogical Society.
Oh, okay. So I didn't realize that you were also the headquarters for the South Carolina Genealogical Society. So actually, all those individuals who are seeking information on South Carolina, they can also contact you about the entire state. Is that what you're saying?
Right, that's right. We house the collection of the South Carolina Genealogical Society within our library, along with our collection of records.
That is wonderful. Well, how many visitors do you have come to the library during the year? And
we
where
average,
do they come from?
Well, we average about, we get about 2,500 to 3,000 visitors a year to the library, and they come from all over the country. I mean, from 40 states, even from, we have members in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's, and we have over 600 members in our genealogical society, and they're from all over the country as well.
That is wonderful. Now, give us an idea of some of the genealogical resources that are available at the Tompkins Library.
Well, one of our major drawing cards, we have over 2,000 family files. These are surname files that contain information on different families that have been donated by different individuals over the years. And
mm-hmm.
We also have over 1,000 family history books. We've got over 1,000 subject files on different homes and churches and communities, not just of Edgefield, but other counties in South Carolina and other states.
Mm-hmm.
We've got records on other counties. We've got records on other states. We've got our court records going back to 1785. And then we have microfilm, the old newspapers, the Edgefield Advertiser. So we have quite a large, extensive collection that we've been building.
Wow. Well, now, Tanya, you mentioned you have, but you sound like you said thousands of, but say that again. How many family histories do you have?
We have over 1,000 family history books, and then we have
okay.
over 2,000 family files.
2,000. And how do those families get those files? How do you get the files?
Well, people come in, or they'll mail in records. These files can contain anything like lineage charts. They can be
mm-hmm.
Bible records, military records, you know, anything anybody wants to send in to us on a particular family, we'll add it to the files, or if, you know, it's not there, we'll create a new file.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is very interesting. Well, give us an idea of some of the more interesting items that have been donated to the library over the years.
Well, recently we've had some large collections come in, and Bernice, is becoming a really great time for researchers, because all these collections, people are becoming more aware of, instead of throwing away documents or putting them in storage after a family member dies or is put in a nursing home, whatever, they are donating them to libraries, and we've
mm-hmm.
been very fortunate here recently to have some several big collections come in. One of the most interesting was the Fraser collection that
okay.
came in a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is on the Fraser family, and this gentleman had been given these records in a trash bag by a man at a flea market, and he brought them into us, and we organized them, and we scanned them all. And these records were not just of white Frasers, but also African-American ones, and actually had some very, very intriguing documents in there.
Such as? I'm very interested.
Well, it was very interesting. Without going into all the details, there was a John Fraser who passed away in Edgefield, and he left 16 slaves to his wife, and then after her death, they were supposed to be freed.
Mm-hmm.
But after his wife's death, they didn't have any children, and his brothers and sisters decided they were going to keep the slaves against the will. Of their brother, but there was one brother, Benjamin Fraser, who decided he was going to fulfill his brother's wish, and he actually snuck those slaves out of Edgefield. This is in 1836. There was a large group who left here and went to Louisiana, and Reuben Drake was heading that group up, and he actually got Reuben Drake to take those slaves with him, and he actually honored that wish, and they were freed in Louisiana. I did research on them, and they do show up as free people of color.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like an Underground Railroad story in 1836, and it's really fascinating.
Well, now, Tanya, is this information accessible to anyone if they go on the Internet, or how would they get it?
Well, we don't really have a lot on the Internet right now,
mm-hmm.
but we're in the process of trying to digitize a lot of our collection. Really, a lot of people have to come in to do research, especially research like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to dig it out. But we do help people who live out of state. We have a lot of people calling us, you know, from Texas and Florida and California and New York, and we try to answer their queries and you know, when they come in, as best we can.
Now, there's a question coming out of the chat room, and they say, I wonder what parish in Louisiana.
Is that information identified? It was Benville Parish, Mount Lebanon.
Okay.
The community of Mount Lebanon. It was Benville Parish, and where those phrases
Benville?
Were.
Are you saying
Benville? Yes, Beinville, Benville Parish.
Benville Parish, right. And what time period was this?
This is 1836.
1836. This is amazing. Now, so if an individual wanted to know, could that be their Fraser connection? What types of support would you provide to them if they called you to ask you for more information about those records?
Well, we can do limited research. I'm a staff of one, and I've been there 13 years, and
mm-hmm.
we have some fabulous volunteers, but you know, we're limited on resources as far as manpower. So mm-hmm. we can do what we call a cursory search, which is a brief search. But
uh-huh.
You know, I suggest if someone really wants to dig out a lot of research and they can't come to the library, to hire, you know, a private researcher, which we can offer them, you know, names and contact information.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you actually store those documents at the Tompkins Library, or do you send them to the archives?
Oh, no, we actually store them in the library.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to what you would consider your major accomplishments, what would they be as far as what have you seen achieved at the library to help it grow and flourish?
Oh, well, the major thing is to watch the library actually physically grow. We've had so many collections come in, like the South Carolina Genealogical Society's papers. We've been given a lot of the documents of the Edgefield County Historical Society as well. And because we've been getting these large collections, we had to actually renovate both of our basements and add 2,000 square feet to the library
mm-hmm.
to house all these wonderful collections that are coming in. So watching the library actually physically grow in size to accommodate, you know, all these records that are coming in, that's a major accomplishment.
That is a major accomplishment. And then to say that you are a staff of one.
Well, we've got a great board. We have a wonderful board of directors, and we have, you know, our volunteers. So I couldn't do it without them.
Right. Well, Tanya, I'm going to open up the phone line just in case we have people who'd like to talk to you. So if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please call 646-200-0491 and press 1 to speak to the host. I'm sure Tanya would love to hear what you have to say and the questions you would like to ask her. Also, those of you in the chat, if you have any questions to ask Tanya, please feel free to put those questions in the chat, and I will then share with her. Okay, there's a question. Do the local genealogy groups help you in any way?
Well, we are the local genealogy group, but we work hand-in-hand with different organizations. Like the Edgefield County Historical Society, and then there's the Greenwood African American Genealogical Society, and there's one in Bamberg, and Red Cliff Plantation is that we've been working with them, helping them host some African American workshops. So So we do actively work with other organizations that are in the area.
Okay. Now, Tanya, I mentioned that, or at least you mentioned something about the Old Edgefield District African American Genealogy Society. So how and why did this come about?
Well, when I first started at the library in 1998, we started having a few African American researchers contacting us, and I started trying to help them as best I could. It was a learning process for me. But it was when I heard, I think it was in 2004, I heard that, this is from the National Archives, they said that, our National Genealogical Society, they said that 90% of African Americans in America today can trace their ancestry back to South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
90%. Now, when I heard that, I sat back and I said, wow, that's incredible. We really got to do something here to help people with their genealogy. Because when you come to the library, and it's overwhelming for anyone starting out, but when you're an African-American researcher, it's even worse. Because you've got all this mythology that goes along with African-American genealogy, that records have been destroyed, that records were never kept. We even had one lady call us and tell us that they didn't have any African-American tombstones before 1900. That's what she had been told. So we decided we were going to start to create, we were going to dig out these records, and we were going to create genealogical resources to help African-Americans. And that's when I started talking to several friends who I'd met, you know, doing research, and we decided to start the African American Genealogical Society to spread awareness and get people more, you know, involved and interested, and show them that it can be done.
Well, do you feel that by separating the group that it made a difference?
Well, we didn't really separate it as much as create a focus.
Okay.
That was the purpose, because I can tell you truthfully that within our genealogical society, both the regular genealogical society and our African-American, we have white members in the African-American society, and we have African-American members in the regular society. I mean, it's not like we were trying to create a whole separate entity. We're trying to create a focus. We want people, you know, to focus in on African-American genealogy and see how it wraps back in, because, you know, it's all connected. You can't do one without the other.
Right, right. Now, one of the things that I've observed is that, it looks like the records are definitely there. And some of the white individuals have information on the blacks. Now, how are you getting the members to share that information so that they can both connect with each other?
Well, that's something that's been slowly happening, and that's one of the great things about the African American Society, because we have people that are now white members who are coming forward, and they have documents. They have old family letters that'll mention slaves or former slaves. They have diaries. They have plantation journals, things of that nature, and now they're coming forward because they say, okay, it's okay for us to go ahead and let these records, you know, be used. It's not going to have a negative stigma placed on it. These people are actually interested in doing research, and we want to help. You know, that's kind of what's happening. You're seeing the gap being bridged.
Mm-hmm. Now, how is that information being shared?
Well, one of the ways is through home plays. And through Quill, we every time something new comes in that's really exciting, we try to, you know, put it out there in one of the newsletters. And we of course, we catalog it and have it there in the library. So if anybody comes in and wants to see it, you know, we'll have it there for them to use.
Mm-hmm.
Some things we are trying to transcribe and publish in book form, like News of the Colored People. When I stumbled across that in the newspaper, I thought, wow, that was amazing. And so there was a newspaper article that came out every week, and it was about the social activities that were going on in the African-American community.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I stumbled across that, I went back and pulled every one of them and then transcribed them and then published them so that, you know, people would have access to that more easily.
So, Tanya, where did you pull that from?
From the Edgefield Advertiser.
from the Edgeville Advertiser. And do you have the old newspapers located at the Tompkins Library?
We do. We have the newspapers going back to 1836 when the newspaper started.
That's wonderful. And is this on all on microfilm?
Most of it is on microfilm, but we do have some of them in hard copy.
That's great. Now, give me an idea of what your hours of operation.
Okay, we're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 4, and on Saturdays from 9:30 to 1:30.
And is there a special time? I mean, could people, if they brought in a group of people and they wanted to come in and stay longer, would you open just for them?
We can make
or
special
the
arrangements,
hours,
yes.
You can make special arrangements?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we can. Like, we've had people come in and use the library for family reunions. But if you had a group that wanted to come in from out of state and do some genealogy after hours, we would make
yes.
an exception for that, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Well, let me just find out, do we have any callers? If you would like to call in and ask a question, please call 646-200-0491 and press 1 to speak to the host. Now, Tanya, I understand that you were involved in doing some research for the Reverend Al Sharpton. Now, how did that? How did you become involved in this research?
It kind of just sort of just happened. It was wow. The whole thing was kind of surreal. I mean, it was just it was on a typical day, and these two gentlemen came in at like 3:30 in the afternoon and said they were interested in Alexander Sharpton, and particularly in his slaves. And I said, okay. And so I kind of quizzed them a little bit, and then they told me that, you know, they were doing research on Reverend Sharpton and that they were with the Asheville Daily News, and New York Daily News. And so I said, okay, well, Alexander Sharpton didn't die until the 1890s, so he's not going to have slaves listed in his estate.
Uh-huh.
But I told him that, you know, his father was Jephthah Sharpton, and he died in around 1838, so I said, let's look at his estate. And they were looking for a particular slave named Coleman, and so long story short, we found Coleman listed in Jephthah Sharpton's estate, and we went over to the Edgeville County Archives, which is across the street from us. And
mm-hmm.
let me tell you real quick about them. We have all of our records going back to 1785, and we have the most complete collection of court records next to Charleston in South Carolina. I have to give a shout-out for them. They've got this state-of-the-art, wonderful vault that's climate-controlled, and the record's just incredible, just to walk in there and see these old, old documents being cared for so wonderfully. But anyway, we went over to the archives, and Tricia Glenn, the archivist, pulled that record, and they photographed it. And I thought that was the end of it until I get this phone call from Ancestry.com telling me that, you know, they're doing this research on him and would I do some more. And so it just kind of snowballed from there.
Now, did you actually meet the Reverend Al Sharpton?
Well, I was close. See, this started on like February the 23rd, and when he came to Edgeville, it was on March the 5th. So that shows you how fast this all happened. And I didn't know he was actually going to be in town. They told me to just be on hold on a particular
uh-huh.
Monday. So our president, Thomasina Daves, was there, and Wayne O'Brien, who is a descendant of the Sharpton slaves as well. We were at the library just, you know, on call, and they called us and said, okay, be at Red Oak Grove Church at such a time, and he'll be there. So we
uh-huh.
jumped in the car and he raced over there to Red Oak Grove, which is near McCormick County. And when we got there, it was just a media circus. I mean, you just can't imagine. It was just insane. And so when Reverend Sharpton arrived, I mean, these reporters were tripping over tombstones and funeral markers. I mean, they were just, I don't know how anybody didn't get hurt, and they were just throwing themselves on the ground to get pictures of him, and he acted like he didn't even see them. I guess that's normal for him. And he went and visited Alexander Sharpton's grave, and So I didn't even get to meet him, but Wayne O'Brien went up and talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing was that that we had just gotten a call before we left the library from a gentleman, Dr. Philip White, who owns Cactus Hedge. That's the name of Alexander Sharpton's plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. White said, "I hear that Al Sharpton, Reverend Sharpton, is going to be, you know, in Edgefield soon. He's welcome to come out to the house." So when we were out there with Reverend Sharpton in the cemetery, Wayne O'Brien went up and asked him, "Do you want to see the Sharpton plantation?" Well, of course, you know, he said, "Yes, I want to go." So we got in my car, you know, the three of us got in my car, and Reverend Sharpton and his group followed us, and all the media is following us. Here we are going down these rural dirt roads with 20 cars following behind us. And we get out the plantation, and Reverend Sharpton gets out, and he meets Dr. White. Dr. White takes him all through the house and takes him back to where there's a slave cabin still standing on the property, and he takes him to the slave cemetery. And, you know, it was really overwhelming. I mean, I couldn't have imagined trying to be Reverend Sharpton and digest all of that was coming at him.
Yeah, and I can just imagine how overwhelming that could be to actually, you know, go to the cemetery. By the way, what was the name of the cemetery?
Red Oak Grove Baptist Church was where we started off.
Okay, Red Oak Grove Baptist Church.
Yeah, Red Oak Grove, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But that's the experience itself, I could imagine how he felt, because he was then, you know, walking in the footsteps of his ancestors. And then having all these people around him, all the media, I mean, it is a lot to take in. And it's a humbling experience, I can imagine.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, the media kept trying to bait him, I guess, on different questions. And one question they asked him, what it was it like to look at the slave cabin where his ancestors probably lived and then see the big house at the top of the hill where the master lived? You know, how'd that make you feel? And
mm-hmm.
I love what Reverend Sharpton said. He said, "I don't see any difference. I feel that all this land here belonged to my ancestors because the masters and slaves are all my family." And, you know,
wow.
that just wraps it up right there. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's the whole point of what we do, is to show, you know, that we're all bound together. You know,
mm-hmm.
we all have a commonality.
Right, right. We're all sharing that same place and time and have had that common experience, although one would have certainly been, as you said, the master, but they still shared that common place. Well, Tanya, we're going to take just a very, very quick break and then come back for some more questions.
Okay.
Just a quick break, okay?
Okay.
To welcome you back to Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This is Bernice Bennett, and we're listening to Tanya Broder, who is the director of the Tompkins Memorial Library in Edgefield, South Carolina. Now, we have some questions coming out of the chat. One of the questions is, was this for the NBC program, Who Do You Think You Are, the information on Reverend Sharpton?
I think that's what it was for. I think they did a special, when they launched their African American collection on Ancestry.com, they were trying to promote it, and they decided to do that by featuring a famous African American, and that's why they focused on Reverend Sharpton. And I think that's the reason they did that.
Oh, okay. Now we have another question coming out of the chat, and they'd like to know what types of programs have the Old Edgefield District African American Group done over the past years?
What kind of programs? Well, every February we have our annual show and tell where people bring in they bring in artifacts, they bring in their family history, and they share some of their experiences in genealogy. And then we've had we've had some great programs. We've had a program at Bettis Academy on its history, and we've had some great speakers on we did one at the Brewer School in Greenwood. Let's see, I'm trying to remember some. We did a great one on DNA research with Melvin Collier. I forgot what the gentleman's name was up there in the genetics. That was very interesting about DNA, how they can do so much with finding out where your actual ancestry comes from.
And how often does the group meet?
We meet four times a year.
Four times a year. And just about how large is this group?
We have about 89 members, and that's across 25 states.
25 states?
Mm-hmm.
And how do people even know about this group?
Well, when we formed the regular genealogical, when we had our regular genealogical society and we formed our African American society, that sort of started the base group because we had a lot of members, you know, want to be members of the African American society. And then word of mouth and, you know, our website and people coming in and visiting the library and finding out about the society, that's how it's kind of spread.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have another question for you, and I know that you were involved in the Reverend L. Sharpton's research. What about helping 50 Cent discover his ancestry? Tell us about that.
Oh, well, that was really exciting. I really enjoyed doing the research. Not that I didn't enjoy it on Reverend Sharpton, but I have more hands-on experience with doing the research on 50 Cent's ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that came about was I was contacted by a reporter with Vanity Fair magazine, and he said that VH1 was thinking about doing this documentary on 50 Cent, but they wanted to know what could be found. So I spent 2 months doing research on his family, you know, trying to dig out what I could find, and that was pretty interesting.
Well, give us an idea of just where did you look and what did you have, what resources did you have to do his history?
Well, the first thing I started with, I got what information I could from the reporter, and then I started looking through census records, because that's where you really start, is at the census, and pulling out what I could find there. And then I started finding, looking through military records. I started looking at death certificates. And once I could get it back to 1870, I started looking for estate records that would list his ancestors as slaves and try to find out what plantation they came from.
Now, the interesting thing, okay, you got to 1870, but how did you, at what point did you determine that his family was enslaved, and then how did you determine which estate records to look at? Because I'm asking this question because we just had a show on slave era research, and we're going to have a part two on that show. So it's very interesting to hear how you went through that process.
Ooh, that's a really complex process because you can be led to it from many different avenues. with his ancestry, I kind of got stuck at 1870.
Okay.
I say I got stuck. I found his ancestor, who was Jane Jenkins. She was a servant in the household of Robert G.M. Donovan.
Mm-hmm.
And so we came to the conclusion that she had been a slave of his, and then after freedom came, she continued to live at his home there in Edgefield in the town. But as far as getting back on the plantation records, what I always tell people, go with the obvious. And that means, let's say you're going with your ancestry and you've got the last name, I don't know, trying to think of something good. I just lost it. Let's go back to the Fraser family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So let's say that your last name is Fraser, and you've been researching your family, and you get it back to 1870, and they've still got the Fraser name. All right. Well, go with the obvious and assume that they came off of a Fraser plantation.
Okay.
Now, what you want to do is, first off, the 1870 census is pivotal as a springboard to get back before 1865. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And while I say that, because what you're wanting to do is look at all the other Frasers who are living around your ancestors, both white and African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're looking at the white Frasers, you can, because see, one thing, all right, two things happen after freedom comes. People either move away or they stay really close to where they had always lived. So if you find them in the census, and every census year, you know, they're pretty much in the same exact spot, you have a pretty good idea that they didn't go anywhere.
Right.
So when you're looking at these white Frasers, let's say you find a Marshall Fraser in 1870 who is living near your ancestor. All right. Then, of course, he's still alive in 1870, so you can't look at him. But look at his father and look at other Frasers in the estate records who died before 1865 to see if your ancestor shows up in any of those estate sales or inventories. Then you want to look at deed records to see if any of your ancestors were bought or sold in deeds or given as gifts, that kind of thing. So that's the main way to go. And then, of course, then you have the complexities of name changing, but I won't go into all that. But that's kind of the methodology, because there is a methodology to it.
Yes.
It's not just a hobby. I tell people this is a science. You know, there's a methodology to doing this. And it's also, I want to bring out that it's a spiritual journey, helping people find their ancestors, because I think it gives you a sense of belonging, and it teaches you who you are through your ancestors.
Right. There really is some connection when once you go into that journey, you do feel that spiritual bond and something that's guiding you as you continue through this journey. But, you know, I have another question coming out of here. So one of the things you said is you found Jane Jenkins as a servant,
mm-hmm.
and that was in the 1870 census.
Right.
Is that what you're saying? And so
right.
you concluded that Jane Jenkins was a slave.
Right, right. And the reason I say that is because I couldn't find her in any of the free people. See, I do free people of color research, too, and I couldn't find her as a free woman of color before 1870. So I had to go with the assumption that she was a slave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I have some comments coming out of here just pretty much agreeing with you about genealogy is not a hobby. That is so true. It's not a hobby. It is a journey, and it's a lifelong journey, and it's one that does connect you with your ancestors and the spirit. So I'm glad that you said that. You know, someone else just said, not just a hobby, but our duty to find our ancestors.
That's right.
And how many people who call you convey that message to you, that when they're calling, they're looking, it's very important for them to find their ancestors.
Oh, yes, and the reactions I get from people, that's what makes it worthwhile, is when you see somebody, you know, see their ancestor in a record and they start crying or they start jumping up and down with excitement. And, you know, that's what really makes it, you know, worthwhile is their reactions. And, and you know, those connections, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I guess for you, would you say this is a very rewarding career for you?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I couldn't think of doing anything else.
Well, I guess not, because you seem to have been in it for a very long time. Well, why don't you give us some tips on those who will be doing or seeking out genealogical resources in South Carolina? Just what basic tips would you share with people as to how they would begin?
All right, well, the way I would begin is do your homework. And when I say do your homework, when people come in the library and they're basically what I call green to genealogy, we give them the genealogy, the lineage charts and the family group sheets, and we tell them to go home and fill them out, start with the oral history, interview family members who are still living who can talk to them and give them some names and dates. I also tell them to go out to, cemeteries where their families are buried and collect information from that, excuse me. And that's all to get it organized, get all your ducks in a row, get everything put into a notebook. That way, you're not having loose papers flying everywhere when you go to a library like ours or to the archives in Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And then learn about the counties. It's very important to know exactly where your ancestors were at a particular time. Like, let's say your ancestors were, let's say you have a family member who died in, you think they died in Edgefield, but it turns out to be Saluda County. Or you think your family comes from Saluda County. Let's say they come from Saluda County. But once you get back to 1895, you're stuck in Saluda. You've got to go back into Edgefield County.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to learn about how the counties broke up over the years. It's important to contact, if you know your ancestors are from Edgefield County, contact a library like ours or the courthouse. Find out where records are housed and what kinds of records they have and how far they date back, and learn more about the area before you even plan your trip.
Now, Tanya, I know the archives is there in Edgefield, but we also have the archives in Columbia. Do you all have the same information, or is it different?
Oh, it's different. It is different. We've got, like I said, our major drawing card are our surname files. We've got those that nobody else has.
Okay.
And then our family history books. Now, we've got a little bit of duplication of what the archives has when you get back into the 1700s, because all we have is what's been published in book form, and, of course, they've got those same books. But and that's what's really good about the archives. If you've gotten back into colonial times, getting back to the Revolution, that's when the archives really comes into play. Also, let's say you don't know what part of South Carolina your ancestors come from, you only know they were in South Carolina, you'll want to go to the archives to start off because they've got records for the entire state. And you can start to look through those and kind of get an idea of pinpointing what county your ancestors came from. And then, of course, you can continue that research into that county.
Now, do you have certain federal records? For example, do you have any of the Freedmen Bureau records?
We have some on microfilm.
You do have some on microfilm. Mm-hmm.
We do have some on microfilm.
Any of the labor contracts?
We have a few of the labor contracts, but we have a couple of copies from original labor contracts.
Oh, you do?
One of them is from Benjamin Bettis's. It's a labor contract dated 1868 between Benjamin Bettis and his former slaves, and it's at the plantation called the Pine House. So we have
now,
that one. And
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just looking at some of the something in the chat that's mentioning the great resource at the Anderson Genealogical Society and the Greenville County Library. They have a very good collection of materials on Ankeny. Am I saying that correctly?
I'm not sure what that is. I know the Greenville County Library does have a very great upstate genealogical room up there. I've been to it one time, and they really have a wonderful facility.
Now, as far as cemetery records, do you have information on all of the cemeteries in that area?
That's an ongoing project. We have inventoried. We've got one volume of our African American cemetery books out. We're working on volume two right now, and if any other societies or any other counties in South Carolina, you know, put out cemetery books, we buy them. You know, that's one of the first things we purchase. So we've been building up that collection. And like if your ancestors died in Saluda County, we've got Saluda County cemetery records and, you know.
Now, one of the things I noticed, it was last year when you all heavily promoted the slave index. From Gloria Lucas, and I'd like to know how many individuals have communicated with you that they've actually found their ancestors in the slave index.
Oh, wow! We've had a number of people contacting us, telling us how wonderful that resource was. I mean, I really have to commend Ms. Lucas on her dedication on that project. That took her 6 years, and what a fabulous resource. I mean, just incredible. And we have had, I just can't tell you the number of people who have called us or sent us emails and told us what a wonderful, you know, resource that is and how they've been able to make links that they had no idea, you know, was out there.
That is wonderful. It'd be wonderful to have a follow-up of those individuals, to have them share exactly what they've found as a result of identifying their ancestor in the slave index.
Oh, I agree.
Well, another thing, I know, tell us about some of the books you've authored.
Well, since I've been at the library, most of what I've authored have been what I call raw data. Transcribing records and publishing them, and most of them pertain to African American genealogy. Like I extracted all of the African American free people of color out of the census from 1790 to 1860 and published that. And then News of the Colored People, I told you about that earlier, the newspaper articles. And I've got a new book that I just came out with on guardianship records.
Oh, tell us about those records.
That was really fascinating. That took 2 years. These guardianship records are overlooked by most people because they either don't know about them or because they're so scattered that they're all over the place. Sometimes you'll find them in books. Sometimes you'll find them in loose papers. And what I did was I took the ones that are in the loose papers. There was over, there's over 1,000 of them, and I had to type them all in. And these guardianship papers, people don't understand that you were considered an infant until you were age 21. They actually
and
called
would you please
infant.
Give us that time period? How long were you considered an infant? From what
until
period
20,
to what year?
Until you were 21 years old.
Okay, but what time period was that? 18
Oh, well, this would have been, these records that I extracted was 17... I think it was about 1797 to 1900.
Oh, okay.
And also, there are in the book, there are free people of color guardianship records. So anyone out there who's doing free people of color research, you know, contact me, and I'll look in the book to see if they're in there. Because what happened was in 1823, free people of color had to have a guardian, a white guardian, to oversee their affairs. So these records are wonderful because they'll say, you know, Hillary Smith, a freeman of color, 44 years old, you know, is a man of good character, and I, you know, Alexander Dean, am willing to become his guardian. You know, so these records, I mean, free people of color is very difficult because they stay under the radar.
Now, is this just for Edgefield County Free People of Color, or is it all over the whole area?
It's Old Edgefield District.
Old Edgefield District, okay.
Uh-huh. So it would include all those counties that broke out of Edgefield as well, until, you know, like as they were breaking out, like Aiken breaks out in 1871, so, you know. But anyway, it would have been Old Edgefield District.
Uh-huh. Tanya, give us a phone number. I mean, if someone would like to call and actually speak to you about the guardianship records, what number should they call?
Okay. Our phone number is 803-637-4010. And I can give you our email address, too.
Okay.
It's oedgs85@gmail.com.
And this goes directly to you?
And that goes directly to me. I'm the person who checks the email. So please feel free to contact me, and I can answer. I'll try to answer any questions that you might have.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned something about maps. Give us an idea of what types of maps we could find of the Old Edgefield District.
We've got two wonderful maps. We have the 1825 Mills Atlas map of Edgefield, and then we have an 1871 Isaac Bowles map of Edgefield. And these maps not only show you, you know, rivers and roads and creeks and all, but they also have people listed on there who paid to be on the map. So you might get an idea of where your ancestors lived by, you know, looking. And the 1871 map also shows you those townships that confuse a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you see your ancestor was in Pickens Township, Edgefield County, that's Pickens Township. That's not Pickens County. That confuses people. Pickens Township is actually the village of Edgefield. It was a like a voting precinct. And so when you see these townships, that's what it's referring to, and this map will show you where those townships were located.
So this is an excellent map for folks to have who are doing their
absolutely.
Research.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Now, there's a question coming out of the chat for you, although I see the question has been answered. Is Edgefield considered upcountry or low country?
We are actually neither. We're called backcountry.
Okay.
Anything above Charleston is called the backcountry. Now you would call us part of the Piedmont section.
Okay.
Anything above us is upcountry. Anything below us is low country. So we're kind of in a strip there in the middle.
Okay. And how close are you to Georgia?
We're about 25 miles from Augusta, Georgia.
Okay, so you might find many of the former people in Edgefield who are actually living in Augusta.
Oh, absolutely. You'll see a lot of people jumping over, especially when Edgefield went all the way to the Savannah River. You'll see a lot of people jumping over into Richmond County, going down to Burke County, Lincoln County, even into Wilkes County, you know, all Columbia County, all along that line. You'll see people jumping back and forth, either looking for work or, you know, whatever. They're going back and forth.
Well, do you have any parting words to share with us before we end this call tonight?
Well, I've enjoyed it, and I would just like to say to everyone, you know, good luck with your research, and also get involved. Don't just sit back and wait for the resources to come to you. Be a part of creating them. We always need people to go out and survey cemeteries and transcribe records. So, you know, find out what you can do to get those records more accessible for other researchers.
Also, Tanya, do you accept articles from individuals who have done research in the area?
Oh, absolutely. We love to have articles come in. We'll publish them in the newsletters. So, yes, definitely send those articles in.
And how often does the newsletter come out?
Home Place comes out twice a year, in the spring and in the fall, and the Quill goes out 6 times a year.
Mm-hmm. And then they can get the Quill online, or it would come by mail?
We have it both ways. Home Place and Quill can go out in PDF form, or you can have it mailed to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now I have Let me see if I have any more questions coming out of the chat. It doesn't look like I have any more questions. So I just want to share with folks what's coming up in the next 2 weeks for research at the National Archives and beyond. We have a show on December the 22nd, and this show is going to be a little different. It's going to feature Dr. Arthur Makuna. Dr. Arthur Makuna is the author of a book entitled Zulu Chess Cutter, From the Slums of Soweto to the Success in America. And Dr. Makuna was actually born in Soweto, and so many of us probably heard about South Africa and apartheid. Well, he is one of those success stories. He was raised in a tiny two-bedroom structure, which he shared with 18 relatives spanning four generations. And he was there during the South Africa Rebellion, and he made a decision to write his memoirs because he came to the United States. He was educated at Xavier University in New Orleans and then went on to medical school at Howard University. And he's now the cardiac thoracic surgeon at Howard University and Howard University Hospital. And so he's coming on to share this very, very moving story with us. I mean, how many of you have thought about writing your memoirs, and you can start off with some very negative things that happen in your life, but you end up being a very motivated and positive person, and you're making a difference in the lives of others. And so that show is next week. I'm also pleased to announce that Aaron Dorsey, many of you heard Aaron speak of the slave era research, where he is coming on for part two. And with part two, we will have ample time for you to ask questions. So please come prepared and get those questions answered that you have. This will be one of those shows where we will listen, you will talk, and your answers will come forth. So I want to thank you, Tanya. Thank you so very much for coming on tonight. You have really provided us with some excellent information. It's really exciting just to hear what's available at various libraries, and clearly the Tompkins Library has so much to offer those who are involved in South Carolina research. So thank you so very much.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. So thank you so much for joining research at the National Archives and beyond. You know, I always end my show with, your ancestors left footprints. Yes, they left footprints. Therefore, you should follow the clues that are presented to you through oral history, family records, research at the National Archives and beyond. Thank you so much for joining the show tonight. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett. Good night, and I look forward to you joining me next Thursday. By the way, I want to just share with you all that I play music coming on the show and at the break and at the end of the show, and I just want to tell you that this music is written by Alvin Alexander. Alvin is my brother, and the title of this music is Sweet Mellow Spice, and I'd just like to thank Alvin for his music. Thank you very much. Good night.